This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust.
When you compare like for like with certain diverse ethnic communities and their white British counterparts, they're paying consistently more. They're facing consistently more difficult access to these products, or they're facing more issues of debt enforcement actions.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch. Of the 70 million people living in the UK today, nearly 11 million of us are from a minority ethnic background. But if that describes your ethnicity or heritage, to what extent might it also determine the cost of your everyday living? In today's episode, we're exploring the ethnicity premium, the potentially higher and hidden costs faced by minority ethnic communities. Talking us through this is Jerry During, co-founder of Money A&E, an organisation that provides money advice and education to disadvantaged groups, diverse ethnic communities, and young people. And in partnership with Rooted Finance, Money A&E are now calling for not just greater recognition of the ethnicity premium, but root and branch reform of the financial services sector to better reflect the diverse communities they serve. Jerry, welcome to Vulnerability Matters. Absolutely fantastic to have you here. Your most recent work focused on the ethnicity premium in the UK financial system. So, what does that mean?
Thanks for having me, Chris. And yes, the ethnicity premium essentially is these extra costs that diverse ethnic communities normally face in services and products that they have to pay. And what we see it as, they're basically barriers to what we call economic participation. So it's barriers to financial products and services you might be able to get. It's barriers to getting financial products like insurances, credit products. It means that many people face debt. There's less opportunities and less life chances for people to actually be economically successful.
So how do we know it's happening? Do you have a couple of examples you might be able to share?
If we look at the report, which is a structural barriers report, it basically shows that there are a number of different things that diverse ethnic communities are facing. So when you compare a Black or an Asian British person with their white British counterpart, we're seeing those diverse ethnic communities are three times more likely to be in debt when they're in a similar situation. We're seeing that they're paying a lot more for things like insurance products or interest rates on credit products that they buy. And essentially, it just means that they've got less opportunities and less chances. So they're paying more, they find themselves more in debt, and they're also finding more barriers to accessing it. So normally, like, the banks will do like credit checks, they use what are called credit reference agencies. And often we're seeing with like-to-like situations and circumstances, diverse ethnic communities are often being refused that credit, whereas their white British counterpart would not be. And we used to think this is just anecdotal, or maybe it's just me, or it's just, you know, me and my brother or whatever. But what we're seeing is there's lots of statistics out there showing that this is happening consistently.
And your review certainly has a lot of these statistics in them. I noticed findings like people from diverse ethnic communities paying £250 more for car insurance than white counterparts with similar risk profiles, or being twice as likely to have gone into debt collection processes in the last 6 months compared to white consumers, or people from diverse ethnic communities accessing and holding fewer financial products despite experiencing more of the life events that might require them. But just so we're clear, Jerry, how sure can we be this is a result of our ethnic background rather than our postcode and where we live, how much we earn, or another factor entirely?
Yeah, you can see that the report in itself actually refers to lots of research that has been done by Runnymede, by the New Economics Foundation, by the Money and Pension Service, who have done research on thousands of people and samples. And they're showing there is often a consistent factor that links to ethnicity when you compare all the other circumstances. So if you look at income level, when you look at postcode, when you look at families and qualifications, professions, jobs, we are consistently seeing that when you compare like for like with certain diverse ethnic communities and their white British counterparts, they're paying consistently more, or they're facing, you know, consistently more difficult access to these products, or they're facing more issues of debt enforcement action.
Now, people can go away and have a look at those findings in the review themselves, but there's a term that we've used there, Jerry, diverse ethnic communities, which probably needs defining at the outset. So what does this mean?
We like the term diverse ethnic communities as opposed to ethnic minorities, because often the term ethnic minorities, we feel it doesn't really recognize the economic power of these groups. You know, they're not actually minorities. When you go into a number of cities and geographical locations up and down the UK, those ethnic minorities are actually often in the majority, you know, in terms of the population. So they are a big part of the community. They're not minorities. They're often majorities. And they're also a growing community. And we feel that the term in itself doesn't really distinguish. It kind of lumps them all together. And it doesn't distinguish the actual characteristics that make them, for example, a good economic actor. And it's often a term that means that they're not recognized by the financial system properly, and they're not treated properly, essentially.
So it's recognizing the differences between them, but also acknowledging, Jerry, the overall block in terms of its spending power or its economic potential. Because I guess, after all, of the 70 million people living in the UK today, nearly 11 million of us will be from a non-white, diverse ethnic community.
Yeah, that's it, Chris.
We've been talking about barriers today, Jerry, and one of the barriers highlighted in your review has been that a significant proportion of people from diverse ethnic communities, I think 20% in one study, reported that they had experienced discrimination when trying to deal with financial services. And another 28% felt they had been treated less fairly. So what does your report and review say about these type of barriers?
Yeah, definitely. It's a growing body of evidence, basically. Before, it could just be dismissed as, oh, that's just a certain situation. That's just because your financial behaviour hasn't been correct. But we're seeing it more and more. We at Money A&E started our organisation out of my own lived experience and my co-founder Greg's lived experiences of debt. And we first thought, as two black men, that, yeah, maybe it's just us, there's an issue. Let's try and start something to help people kind of deal with this problem and see there's light at the end of the tunnel. When we started our agency, we started to see that the people coming in were having the same problems. So we started to think, hold on, there's a pattern here, right? And then we started to talk to lots of partners. So we spoke to Fearful Finance, Money and Mental Health, Step Change, Rooted Finance, also the CAB as well. And we began to see, yeah, this is a massive issue here. We need to do something about it. So we at Money A&E essentially decided, yeah, let's look at this more. Let's delve into it. Let's not just create a report that gathers dust and say, hey, look, here's a problem. There's nothing we can do about it. But what we really wanted to do, and we're really focused on taking action, is let's try and create some solutions. So we came up with five specific areas that kept on coming up, and we came up with some of the solutions for them.
So what are they, Jerry? Don't tease us. What are the five big recommendations?
Yeah. So the five recommendations are to reform credit risk assessments by financial institutions. Number two is to improve the transparency of risk assessment measures for diverse ethnic communities and low-income groups. The third is to ensure that we have better representation in terms of leadership and accountability within these financial institutions. Four, it's really important we have culturally relevant financial education and financial debt recovery processes that are based on the lived experience of the communities who are facing those financial challenges. And number five, we want to ensure that we are supporting diverse ethnic community businesses who are often facing problems finding finance, and we want to encourage and invest in diverse ethnic cultural products and services as well. So those are the five recommendations.
Okay, we don't have time for five recommendations, but let's address a few you really wanted to highlight. So one of these, Jerry, is reforming credit risk assessment. So what is credit risk assessment and why does it need to be reformed with diverse ethnic communities in mind?
Yeah, so credit risk assessment has, it's essentially how are people profiled as customers, and current systems don't necessarily allow us to understand cultural practices. And often a lot of cultural practices, which are really good financially resilient behaviors, are often seen as the opposite, and they're seen as very high risk. And as a result, credit like loans and mortgages are refused, or they're paying very high interest rates. I mean, a quick example might be savings circles. So you have people from diverse ethnic communities. They might be from Africa, the West Indies, Asia. And what a lot of they do is a group will come together and they all save together and they contribute into this financial product, basically. It's almost like a circle. And every week people, they'll put money into it. And then essentially the product then pays out a big amount to each of the members at specific times. So this is a product that is not really recognized in our current financial system. And often when people are paying this, banks and financial institutions will see that they won't see this product, and they'll think, oh, they're throwing their money away, basically, and they're using it recklessly. And it will often assess them as being a higher risk than they actually are, when they're showing really good financial behaviors, essentially, because they're saving, they're showing disciplined budgeting, and they're also able to get, you know, a big payout at the end to use for certain financial goals. People in the West Indian community use this sort of a system back in the day, really, to try and get on the housing ladder.
And your review mentions these saving schemes. I think that Partner is in there with one research study finding that one in 20 people from a diverse ethnic community, I think mainly from a Caribbean heritage, had used a Partner scheme. And of those using them, more than half, I think about 56%, were doing that at least once a month. It's really, really interesting. I seem to recall that the Bank of England Museum, which is a great place, you can hold a gold bar in your own hands, actually ran a large exhibition on Partner a few years ago. So saving schemes like this clearly aren't a new concept that's unfamiliar to everyone in financial services. And I'm sure listeners from all ethnic backgrounds can probably name examples of similar schemes themselves that they know about. But let's move to your second recommendation, leadership in the financial services sector. Now, the report suggests that voluntary diversity targets for leadership haven't shifted the dial enough. Can you pick that up, Jerry, and just tell us, what are you then recommending?
Yeah, so what we are recommending is that we need to see more leadership, more accountability, and more representation across all of the organization. Leadership is one of the first steps, but across all of these financial institutions and organizations. Without that diverse ethnic community who understands these cultural groups, we feel that the products and services will fail to fit purpose. And that's just talking about it from a kind of financial economic sense, but it's just not fair. I mean, banks are meant to be there for all of us, for all of our communities, but they're not serving large swathes of the community as a result, unfortunately, because of this outdated system and this lack of cultural understanding of these diverse ethnic communities, these DEC groups.
Now, the Financial Conduct Authority did appear to be taking this seriously because they had a diversity and inclusion program for financial services. But as I understand it, that's kind of been changed a little bit. Have I understood that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the banks, the industry bodies have these forms of, like, they do audits and they have things based on gender. They're trying to do stuff on ethnicity, but the reality is they dropped it. There is no real regulatory requirement. So at the moment, it's mainly just sort of banks and financial institutions self-imposing this on themselves. And as they do it, it means that it's not uniform. It means that it's very slow. And in many cases, it's very superficial. And often, when there is a problem, there's no real understanding or penalty or a way to actually improve it happening. So we're not seeing these systems be really effective because they're essentially self-governing. There's no kind of regulatory element to it and there's no consistency. It's slow. So we need to really look at some form of system that really mandates this and allows them to take it more seriously. And essentially, it's in a bank and a finance institution's best interest to do this. That diversity behind an organization is what keeps it current, what keeps it sustainable, keeps it profitable.
So that shift, that for you, is frustrating and a step back, because it almost signals that perhaps it's not quite important as they once thought it was.
Very, very much so. And unfortunately, we launched this in Parliament, I think it was April the 3rd last year, and that dropping of the recommendation happened just before that. So we were really disappointed by that as well, and just thought this is really a step back in terms of the sorts of progress we can make in this country. And it's really short-sighted, I think, as well, because it's not just about these populations and these groups. It's about us as a society. It's about what we say about ourselves as a society, is about how these businesses and the sector, you know, we want to serve all of the communities and be the best financial sector in the world. So it is so important that we take this seriously, and mandating it will help us all, even the banks or the finance sector. We don't want to take a step back. We want to kind of continue having that leading edge.
Okay, let's turn to a third recommendation. It's going to be our final one for the podcast episode, but you can go and have a look at the report for yourself. And this recommendation is one that I know is central to the Money A&E mission, Jerry. It's relevant financial education and debt reform. So can you tell us what the recommendation is and how financial services, credit, debt, would look differently if it were put into practice?
Yeah, so when we say culturally relevant, we mean exactly what we've been talking about, understanding the communities you're working with and making sure that the system is able to pull down those barriers, allow them to access it and do well. And what that looks like is having what we call trusted community institutions who are key to those cultural demographics and are trusted by the communities that are having these issues. So community institutions that are really important. The other is trusted advice intermediaries as well. So at Money A&E, we're made up of lived experience. As I mentioned, myself and Greg started out of our own lived experience. And we recruit like most of our staff, I think it's about 3/4 of our staff, are people who come from the community that have lived experience of debt and poverty. So it's really important that that creditors have those intermediaries. So creditors in the public sector, in the private sector, this might be your gas supplier, this might be your bank, the credits institution. We work with these creditors and create that bridge and that intermediary, that gap essentially, which helps the community and the creditor. It helps both. It helps the individual and the community and the creditor. Often creditors have to write off large numbers of debt. And when they have that intermediary, when they have that trusted person, it means they're writing off a lot less. For the individuals, it means they're no longer facing those kind of debt issues, those mental health issues that they're facing a lot of the time. And it means that they're less financially excluded as well. So they're often able to have a repaired relationship and continue to do that to get to their financial goals as well.
We're reaching in now, Jerry, and we've covered 3 big recommendations: reform credit risk assessment, leadership in financial services, and culturally relevant financial education and debt recovery. But a final question for you. What's next for Money A&E and your work around the ethnicity premium?
Yeah, so we're trying to do it. There's a lot of work to be done there with those recommendations, and we're working with a variety of different partners. But there are 3 areas that we're really focused on at the moment. And one is the Grow Your Own Advice program. So what we're doing, this kind of feeds into the whole leadership and representation bit. What we're doing is we're training up people with lived experience, ex-people facing financial distress, and we're training them up to be legal debt and money advisors, essentially. And what we're doing is they're getting a national qualification to go and do that in our organization, but other organizations as well. So that's one thing we're doing, our Grow Your Own Advice. The other thing is around sort of culturally relevant debt advice and financial education. With our debt advice, what we are doing is developing our service of lived experience advisors and working as that trusted intermediary with large public and private creditors. So we create that middle ground of trust. And we're also working with some trusted intermediaries in the community where we're training them up to basically engage with those customers as well. And lastly, what we're also doing is creating a financial education program that is offered to public and private sector organizations that not only builds education of workforces within those organizations, but helps people to access relevant financial products and services that are designed for them and help them achieve their financial goals and that financial freedom that they need. So those are kind of like the three areas. We're very busy, but we've got a great team of lived experience people doing some amazing things. So yeah, those are kind of like the three areas that we're focusing on, Chris.
Fantastic. And we look forward to you coming back to talk about them in the future. Jerry, thank you very much indeed.
Chris, thank you so much.
And that was Jerry Durin on ethnicity, equity and essential financial services. If you want to find out more about the review, Equity and Finance, which was produced in collaboration with Rooted Finance and Clearview Research, make sure to visit either moneyane.co.uk or rootedfinance.org.uk. And that's about it for today. So until next time, keep reading widely, keep thinking deeply, and always remember that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.